Call is now being recorded.
Hi, all. This is John Heerdink at Groundwork Forum Podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Today we have, I think, an interesting interview with one of my good friends, Chad Gray. He's currently a portfolio manager for Convergence Investment Management, where his focus is on quantitative strategies involving closed-end funds. Chad just briefly came into finance from a background in data analytics and various Silicon Valley roles, and his education consists of an MBA and MS at MIT and EECS, or I'm sorry, EECS at MIT. So happy to have Chad here today. I think you'll find it interesting and maybe you'll discover some more intel on closed-end funding and why it makes sense. Chad, would you like to add anything to that today? Thanks again.
No, I don't think so. That's a great intro, and thanks for having me, John.
Of course. So I guess a simple way to start here is maybe you could just help us understand what is a closed-end fund?
So a closed-end fund, it's actually a generally I think misunderstood or something that a lot of people in finance have heard about, but they don't really know what it is. I find them endlessly fascinating. In a nutshell, closed-end funds are one of a few different types of exchange-listed funds that retail investors can invest in. So everybody knows about ETFs, which are a relatively new innovation in the past 20, 25 years. Everybody knows about mutual funds, which have been around for, you know, probably 70 or 80 years or 100 years. Many people don't know about closed-end funds, which have actually been around since the 1890s in the U.S. So they were the first way in which an investor in the U.S. could give their money to a professional fund manager to follow a certain strategy in a certain asset class. What makes them different and where they get the name closed end is that closed end funds, unlike either ETFs or mutual funds, have a fixed or a closed amount of capital. So a closed end fund will IPO in the same way that a company will IPO, and it may have 20 million shares that are created, which raises a, you know, let's say $400 million or some number like that. That fund management company then has that fixed amount of money to manage using a certain strategy and following a certain investment mandate, you know, with the goal of obviously making that money grow. The way in which closed-end funds become interesting and different from other things that that your listeners are probably more familiar with, like mutual funds, is that closed-end funds have no way in which the investor can just go and say, I'd like, you know, here's my 1,000 shares, Mr. Fund Company, I'd like to get the money back. Instead, a closed-end fund investor has a set of shares, 1,000 shares in the fund. If they want to liquidate their position, they have to find somebody else to buy it from them, just like you would if you had a common stock in the company. So it's really just a different wrapper that you can put around a set of assets and around a manager's strategy to allow individuals to kind of share in the gains and so forth of that manager strategy. I'll talk, I'm sure, later on about what that implies for investment strategy, but a closed-end fund is one of the three different types of funds that are in the 40 Act in the U.S.
Got it. That makes sense. So I guess within a closed fund, like a mutual fund or an ETF, they typically have a strategy or a type of asset class that they might be investing in. How does it work and what's inside these closed-end funds? And can you give some clarity on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So a closed-end fund is just a wrapper or a vehicle that you put around assets. Just like an ETF is just a wrapper, and you can buy a bond ETF or a stock ETF or a gold ETF or whatever. Same is true for closed-end funds. You can find virtually every asset. So there are about almost 600 closed-end funds in the U.S. Currently. They represent about one out of five listings on the NYSE, so it's a pretty big part of the market that people don't really know about. Of those, some of the, you could find, you know, a gold closed-end fund. You could find a real estate investment trust closed-end fund. You could certainly find a lot of plain vanilla U.S. equity funds. And then there are a whole lot of different kinds of bond funds. Generally, one of the real advantages, one of the strengths of the closed-end fund vehicle is that the fund manager doesn't have to worry about daily redemption. You know, they don't have to worry about everybody coming and wanting their money back today, which means that they tend to be a great way for fund companies to raise assets to invest in less liquid asset classes, such as, you know, municipal bonds, for example, are a very popular kind of a closed-end fund asset class, partly because, well, for a few reasons, but partly because they can really take advantage of the more sticky capital. They don't have to worry about redemption. So closed-end funds, I guess, to summarize, can contain anything. They tend to skew a little bit more towards bond-oriented strategies or asset classes that are, you know, towards the more towards the fixed income end of the spectrum. But there are certainly, there are, you know, probably 100 plus U.S. equity closed-end funds as well.
Interesting. Yeah, it seems like for many strategies in the equities market that maybe the closed-end fund could make a lot of sense, especially ones that are maybe in a more liquid types of equities that you would allow the thesis to play out, say, over the course of, you know, 1, 2, 5, 10-plus years. What is the typical age rates, range of, say, a closed-end fund? How long is it around since it's there's some sort of term? Is that the case or not?
Well, so that is starting to become a form that closed-end funds are taking. There are things called term trusts where at the date of IPO, there will be a specified date at which the fund manager is going to liquidate the assets and return them to the liquidate the principal and return to the shareholders. Historically, that's not been the case. They've been evergreen. So there are funds today that I think the oldest one that's currently traded was started in the 1920s or thereabouts. So there are, you know, so they are perpetual in theory. In practice, a lot of funds were created, you know, different periods of time in the market's history. There were sort of booms in IPOs for closed-end funds. So there's some, you know, there's a cluster that are about 10 years old. There's a, you know, cluster that are newer. There's another cluster that's maybe 20 plus years old. And there are a few very old ones. So they do span the spectrum of age. Something else that I guess just to add on to my last answer is that I think maybe a couple of years ago there was a lot of talk in the financial press about the coming kind of car crash of super liquid products like ETFs holding relatively less liquid products like high yield bonds or other kinds of fixed income, and this idea that if you have this perfectly liquid vehicle on top that forces the fund company to, you know, raise cash kind of at a blink of an eye, you have a real problem in the case of a kind of a run on the, you know, if everybody wants their money back. Closed-end funds, I think when that day comes, I think there will be a point at which ETFs kind of have, you know, will run into some sort of hiccup with having, you know, illiquid assets inside of a liquid vehicle. Closed-end funds, I think, will get a lot more interest at that point as just a more sane way to, you know, for fund companies to bundle assets and provide the service to shareholders.
Gotcha. So you mentioned along the way here about, you know, one of the closed-end funds housing sort of municipal bonds, et cetera, which to me speaks to income. So speaking of that is, you know, why would investors want to consider beyond sort of some of the characteristics you already mentioned, consider investing in closed-end funds? And I would assume one of them probably going to be income, but please, you know, let me know what you think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the most commonly marketed part of the value proposition is income or distribution yield or dividend yield, as you want to call it. It's probably the reason why most shareholders of closed-end funds got interested in them in the first place. And it's definitely true that even in today's, you know, low yield environment, closed-end funds are the corner of the market where you can, you know, pretty easily create a portfolio that generates, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12% yield, which is, you know, doesn't come, you know, without without its own set of risks and factors to consider, but it's a yield-oriented vehicle. And so that's probably the most common reason why somebody might come to closed-end funds. I guess other things that I think are you know, make a good case for them is closed-end funds have the ability, unlike other types of 40 Act vehicles, to employ a certain amount of leverage. It's not a ton. It's, you know, maybe a third to a half leverage. And that allows, and the leverage that PIMCO can borrow at, and the margin rate that PIMCO can borrow at, is a whole lot less than what, you know, John Doe can borrow at in their Schwab accounts. So it tends to be a way for somebody who's looking to get a, you know, greater market exposure with their dollar to do that. And I guess the most commonly, the point of the most fascination about closed-end funds is this idea I haven't talked about yet, which is the fact that closed-end funds are something that is simply traded between buyers and sellers. You know, somebody who has a share who wants to get rid of it and somebody else who wants the share who's willing to buy it. That means that those two buyers and sellers are going to negotiate a price, just like any other stock. You know, there's a bid and there's an ask, and the price at which the stock trades is what those two people will trade it for. That means that the price that a closed-end fund trades at on the NYSE doesn't have to be the same as what the fund is worth. And in fact, it's almost never the same. The difference between those two, so if the fund is worth $20 per share and I'm able to buy it for $19 per share, then I've purchased it at a 5% discount to its fair value or its net asset value. And that's very common in the closed-end fund space. It obviously ebbs and flows over time, but that is the thing, I guess, other than the yield, that causes a lot of people to get excited about the uniqueness of closed-end funds, the opportunity to buy a dollar for 90 cents, as gets said often.
So, okay, so you have this sort of, if, I guess you would say that they have an enhanced yield, and I think you've mentioned in our discussions and also in your payment, your fund convergence, there's an eventual convergence. Can you speak to that and how that is related, and why there's some element of predictability that has weaved into these this asset class?
Yeah. So I guess to extend on my last comment, and this kind of gets to the core of the strategies that we employ are really based on this idea that, you know, every closed-end fund has a price and every closed-end fund has a value, and those two numbers will get closer and further apart as time goes by. So that, you know, that value of $20 that you bought for $19 may may diverge further, you know, perhaps price and value move further apart for whatever reason, or they might converge closer together. And the thing that has been as true as gravity and other truisms of nature is that price and value do over the long term tend to converge together, and that is not always that's a very attractive thing in investment strategies, knowing that, you know, two values are linked in some sort of way where they will eventually be sort of more likely to move towards each other than away from each other. The way that closed-end fund investors, either retail individual investors or through a fund like mine, take advantage of that is trying to purchase assets when they are stretched to the point of, you know, they're out of favor or they're being sold for prices that are well below their intrinsic value, creates an opportunity to buy something that is, temporarily oversold or is temporarily out of favor, with the idea that it's more likely than not that price will converge in the direction of its value, which in this case happens to be higher, over the investment horizon. And that means if the underlying value of that fund goes up by 10%, but it also the gap between the price and the value narrow by another 5%, then, you know, instead of making a 10% return, you make a 15% return. So it's a seen as a way to enhance your odds of positive returns, or to enhance the size of your positive returns and to reduce the size of your negative returns.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So I guess you sort of alluded to it, but could you maybe be a little bit more specific on your approach to investing in closed-end funds and your current focus, your fund itself as well? Could you speak to that?
Yeah, sure. So our Convergence manages four different strategies, three of which are really centered on the idea that I just described, this idea of divergence and convergence between price and value. And the three different strategies, one is market neutral, you know, so it's looking to go short on things that are overvalued, you know, just as much as going long on things that are undervalued, short things that are overpriced, and long things that are underpriced. Then a second and third, which are very similar and follow the same set of models, but do it in a long only way, in a way that's appropriate for an IRA account, or maybe a way that's appropriate for a taxable account, but investing really focused on muni bond funds. All three of the, you know, whichever of the three strategies we're talking about, they all take the same quantitative approach. I use a machine learning framework, which is becoming more common these days, but it's really using quantitative models that can assess the probabilities that price is going to move closer to value or further away from value, and you know, move up or move down, and constructing portfolios of lots of closed-end funds, either on the long side only or on the long and short side, in a way that is most likely to benefit from the reversion to the mean of the convergence between price and value, in a way that hopefully enhances return beyond whatever returns generated by the asset classes that the portfolio holds.
Great.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Let me ask you this. If you had to direct any of the listeners to learn more about closed-end fund investing in general, what would you have them do to better understand that? And then, you know, would you be comfortable in also offering out how they might learn more about your specific investment style and your funds?
Yeah, absolutely. So their closed-end funds and the ecosystem around them is sort of there are people scattered all over the country, and their associations and their analysts that kind of make this tapestry of closed-end fund specialists. There are some great websites. There's one website that's sponsored by Nuveen, which is a large fund company, I believe, out of Chicago, called cefconnect.com, cefconnect.com. And that's a go-to source for data. It doesn't have a ton of description on it. There are actually probably the best way to get an overview of some of the of kind of a narrative overview of closed-end funds would be to go to the resources section on my website. I'll give you in a minute, and that points to a bunch of other practitioners and other firms out there that focus on this asset class. So probably the best way to reach out to us would be to go to our website at Convergence, convergence-investments.com. And on there are links to, I think a few general resources, as well as a lot of academic research from over the past three, 4 decades on this sort of premium and discount and the pricing anomaly that exists in the closed-end fund space. And otherwise, I'd reach out to me, and I'm happy to, I love to educate people about the asset class. So if you've got any curiosity, would love to spread the word.
Well, thanks again, Chad. I guess parting comments, I would leave it to you. Is there anything else you would add that we haven't covered today in regards to closed-end funds or otherwise before we sign off?
I think the one thing, so when I speak at conferences, the thing I usually and often to an audience maybe like yours that is interested or is just learning about closed-end funds, the thing that I most often stress is that closed-end funds are a phenomenal way for somebody who is a contrarian or who likes to maybe see what the market isn't seeing or to buy when others are selling and sell when others are buying. As Buffett says, be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. So in my view, the most profitable way to use closed-end funds is somewhat as the counter, kind of the contrarian. I think people who, in their heart of hearts know that they're bad chasers or they tend to be momentum chasers probably, I would love if they traded closed-end funds because I'll probably be trading against them, but it's, I think in their best interest, it's not a great place to run with the crowd. It's a great place to be a contrarian and to benefit handsomely from being kind of thinking differently.
That makes sense, Chad. Well, thanks again for all the insight, and I look forward to hearing from you again at Groundwork Forum. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining the network, and I'm sure all of us learned a little bit more about closed-end funding today than we knew before we got on here. And wish you much success in your endeavors at Convergence and otherwise. And have a great rest of the week. And thank you all for listening.